Well, we've just listened to the parable of the prodigal son. And it's like no other parable because it's open-ended. It begs the question, did the elder brother join the party? This whole story starkly lays, of course, before every generation the consequence of human nature and the need for divine salvation. It's not just a fictitious story from the past. It's a mirror of life today. And it stirs the soul to see ourselves in the central characters and to learn the many lessons that go far beyond the traditional conceptions of the story of the prodigal son. The story was told, of course, as a rebuke to the Pharisees because they had found Jesus in the company of those who by any standards of life would be labelled as sinners. But these were the folk who eagerly welcomed Jesus into their company and they wanted to hear what he had to say while the Pharisees remained outside the house complaining. They considered themselves religious men, holy, a class apart. And a teacher like Jesus should have nothing to do with lower class citizens whom they themselves ignored. And so we have these contrasting responses of welcome and rejection. And they gave rise to Jesus telling three parables. First, the well-known story of the lost sheep that represented the sinners. Both of them lost in the wilderness. They knew they were lost, and they needed the shepherd. The lost coin represented the Pharisees. Both of them, you see, were lost in the home. But they didn't know it. But both were equally precious. So there's the relentless search until they are found, and then the shared rejoicing begins. Now, of course, there are many theological and evangelical insights about God's saving grace and how precious we are to him. But these basic lessons that are found in these material examples are really there to set us up. To set us up for the more personal teachings about the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. Because straight away in the story we see reenacted the mystery. The mystery of divine love that gives freedom of choice to humankind. Because the father allows the selfish, self-willed younger son to have his own way, his own share of the inheritance, and he lets him disappear. In contrast to the elder son who stays at home. He stays at home and he does the father's will. And then we catch up with the younger son when he's reduced to begging. And it's only when life is almost unbearable that he comes to his senses. It's a timeless pattern, isn't it? Of all folk who become selfish, or gain riches, or attain power, and then have no guiding principles or self-control. It finds a parallel today, doesn't it, in all sorts of lifestyles, because it's only when the past catches us up or disaster strikes, when money or health fails, that many discover life's true priorities and what really matters most, and then seek a remedy. The prodigal son certainly saw himself for what he was. And repentant, he chooses to return to his father, feeling totally unworthy as a son. And in my personal experience, it could not have been a coincidence that the father was out there scanning the horizon for the son to return. And he spots him, broken and almost unrecognizable, but that's enough for love. There's no retribution. He's received not because he is reformed, but because love is waiting and wanting. And he runs, yes, he runs to embrace his son, to pardon him, to forgive him, and to restore him, not as a servant, but as a son. And boy, how the celebrations begin. And here are the words that tug at the heartstrings of any mother and father who had been through this experience. We just had to celebrate because this son of mine was dead and is alive. He was lost and he's found. And so we move on in the story and we can see the comparison. The comparison between a divine reception and the imperfect human response, which is typified in the attitude of the elder son. He views the younger son, you see, just as the Pharisees viewed the sinners, a lost cause. This son of yours has squandered a lot on bad living and you welcome him back. You even celebrate when I've worked for you all my life and I've never had anything like this. So all the grudging, envious, servile nature pours out of him. And so by his own attitude and his own choice, he has placed himself outside of the Father's love. And even when the father reminds him that everything he has is still available as it always has been, he remains stubborn, unsympathetic to the joy of his father, who still begs him to come in and join the celebration. And that's how it ends. I think we can sum it up like this. The prodigal son did wrong and realizes his error. Oh, his past deeds were wrong, but his attitude is now correct. The elder son had been wrong all the time, but doesn't see it. Oh, yes, his past deeds were correct, but his attitude is wrong. The repentant prodigal feels that he should be treated no better than a servant, but he's welcome homed and restored as a son. But the elder brother's attitude has always been one of a servant. He doesn't have the affection of a son. You see, both of them, just like you and me, we have to look for life's fulfillment in the right direction. And it's waiting all the time. And it's offered freely in the Father's home. Well, they're challenging lessons, aren't they? They are for me. They cause us to conclude that a wrong spirit is worse than a wrong deed. Oh, yes, it is. It's much easier to detect and to correct an outward deed than it is to change our flawed natures and our wrong attitudes. I know that time and time again I have to try and deal without success with the Pharisee and with the attitude of the elder brother that constantly lurks within all of us, who all too often manifest themselves in all sorts of ways, both in our relationship to God and with each other. And what about the Father? Well, of course, we see in him the redeeming, measureless love of God. But we should also be hearing this morning the call to move on in life, to situations, you see, that are not just age and family related, to move on to a spiritual maturity, to try and attain to a Christ-like nature, to become the loving, caring mothers and fathers for those who are today's lost sons and daughters, who are depressed. They're confused by things, they're deprived, they're addicted to this corrupt and beguiling wilderness in which we live today. And amongst them are folk whose company we would rather not keep. Always hold before you the fact that the one who told this story actually lived it out here on earth. And it took him to a cross. And I preach because I just believe that there is no way of being found and renewed that is outside the journey that Jesus took. No matter in what way we remain lost, we will never find ourselves. Do-it-yourself remedies offered by the increasingly secular society are failing us as the ways of God are disregarded and we choose our own ways, individually or as communities or as nations. No matter what our self-possessed strengths are, our psychological insights, our secular reasoning, our financial or political practices, life's perfect model, and the enabling grace to imitate that divine love can only come from the Father, who rushes, yes, he rushes to meet us in a spiritual interaction that renews and restores us as born again sons and daughters, creating a right spirit within us, accepting the Father's invitation and responding to everything that he offers us. And that brings us back to the start. Did the elder brother accept what the Father offered? Well, we know that the Pharisees didn't accept Jesus. They went on to totally reject him. But perhaps this uncertain ending is there to remind us just how difficult it is to find a way out of our personal state of lostness when our spirits within us are out of touch with the Spirit of God the Father.